This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Closer and closer, BT, to some game action this weekend. There'll be some spring training games, obviously, next month, opening day. You start to think, and we know that both teams so far have had, I don't want to say significant injuries, but enough to impact them with Montas, with the Mets, Stanton, with the Yankees. It does get
Clark
you thinking.
Clark Schmidt with his back.
Clark Schmidt as well. And that's what we talked about with Stroman, remember, earlier in the week, talking about, hey, things are fragile. What happens if somebody goes down? So the Yanks are covered, though, in the rotation, right? Because that's how they were built. Gerrit Cole, Fried, they brought in Rodon, whether we like him or not, whatever, it doesn't matter for the conversation. He's still a high-paid pitcher. The Yankees have invested the majority of their resources in that rotation. Whereas the Mets, I don't want to say went cheap in the rotation, but you know what I mean? Their big investments have been in the lineup now, bringing in Juan Soto, bringing back Pete. And yeah, bringing back Manaea was a nice move, but the Mets rotation is one, more of depth than it is quality atop the rotation. The Yankees have the opposite. I think I'd prefer. Now, I always used to go the Yankees way, meaning I give me Cole, give me Fried, let's go to war, figure it out. You get the big slugger with Judge, you don't need a loaded lineup. But I think the way the Mets are doing it in today's game, to me, is more beneficial long term.
You know, it's interesting. I think both teams are good. I think both teams have a chance to be really good. I think both teams are flawed. That could maybe unravel some things if it doesn't go the way we want from a health perspective. And I also think that neither team really went all in a little less than offseason for both the Yankees and the Mets. I mean, you look at this, the Yankees are hoping that a 37-year-old first baseman regenerates in Goldschmidt. They don't have the third baseman right now. You touched on,
outfield.
That's where I was going. Left field and certainly depth. I don't like the Yankees bench. But, you know, when we were growing up, I think a lot of, even when we were, not when we were kids, but beyond that, like, the Yankees would always have, like, a Ruben Sierra coming off the bench or a Chili Davis. Like, I just think that those days are done around baseball because the aging, slow hitter has pretty much been phased out of the game. It's been a little bit more athletically, inclined, so to speak, more dynamic players. So the Yankees are obviously rolling the dice on a couple of positions here. And, you know, I don't love, although I understand it, I don't love the Mets going with a six-man rotation.
Right.
Again, but I get it. But I like it even less when one guy who I didn't even really believe in, neither did you, and Frankie Montas, he's out until at least, I know they say May, I would think so. At least May. So we'll say at least May. And they're still going to do this this six-man experiment here with some arms that we don't know a whole lot about. So that's why I started the statement with, I think both teams are good. I think both teams could be very good. But both teams stop short of going all in this offseason.
But which way would you prefer to build a team? Because I think you touched on something interesting there. If this were 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, I would be saying, give me Cole, give me Fried, give me Aaron Judge. I'm okay with that. Give me Giancarlo Stanton. But the way the sport has evolved, I don't think it's a smart investment in putting your a lot of your resources in the starting rotation and pitchers, which we know have been so fragile, and not having depth or versatility in that lineup. I mean, you mentioned it with Stanton. He's been clogging up a spot for years. They're relying on him even more this year, relying on him without Juan Soto to be an impact bat. He's already hurt to start the year. You know he's always going to get hurt anyway. So, like, the DH spot, the lack of depth, the resources used in the starting rotation, those are all to me. Now, again, I still think the Yankees are going to be a good team and go to the World Series,
yep,
but I just don't like the philosophy in building a team that way in today's game.
I don't think they want to build it that way, quite frankly, but I think that some of these contracts, DJ's got a couple of years to go, the Stanton stuff lingers. That's why all these mistakes that, I should say all the mistakes, I mean, they've been a very good franchise, but some of the mistakes that Cashman's made in the last couple of years, it's still right in front of us here. I'm going to answer it directly.
Right.
So which one do I prefer? I don't think either is perfect, to be very clear, but
I'm not talking about Mets versus Yankees.
No, we're talking about Mets and Yankees.
Yeah.
Very, very clear distinction. I'm happy you say
that.
How
you build a team.
Yeah, it's not like, the Yankees are going to win 93 and the Mets are going to win 92 or 94. No, it's not about that. It's about pushing this thing forward. What's the more prudent approach? I'm going to answer it this way with a question, but you'll know where I stand when I ask the question. What do you think is easier to address midseason? Finding, let's say in the case of the Yankees, a third baseman who very well might bat sixth or seventh or eighth, or a guy at the top of the rotation that you're going to give the baseball to in October, either as an ace or two or three. I think it's a lot easier to solve the Yankees' issues. And listen, more issues may present themselves deeper in the season if Dominguez isn't the real deal, more injuries, whatever. But we're just addressing it today. I actually prefer the Yankees way, but I know that it's not perfect. But I do prefer it slightly more than the Mets. I don't love the Mets staff.
Even that, by the way, has changed. Where in season, you used to think, okay, well, there's going to be a top pitcher who's going to hit free agency. He'll be available. It's going to be a couple of top offensive players. Like, I think it used to be more offensive players. I'm not so sure anymore. We've seen the Mets for years, dating back to like Billy Epler with Darren Ruff and Daniel Vogelbach. They needed a bat. There wasn't a good option out there. Like, there wasn't a bat. So I think it depends now. You know, where the contracts lined up. Like, look, maybe Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to be the big bat that's on the market. Is there an arm? I don't know. Maybe we could find that out. Who are going to be the potential arms, free agent arms out there? I just think the smarter investment, here's the way I would say it. The difference between, and you know, if I were going to invest in a starting pitcher this offseason, it would have been Max Fried.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been the guy I would have invested big in. But what's the difference between Max Fried and Sean Manaea?
I think Max Fried's stuff is better,
but I'm not saying
that there's not some infinite difference.
Okay,
I mean, Manaea's good and Max Fried's really good.
And then look at the value in what you're paying one versus the other. And I'm not trying to, again, like, it's not trying to say, well, the Yankees are getting wrong. I'm just saying, like, when you actually look at the value, I think there's more value in the way the Mets are doing it. Yeah, Montas, same thing, and obviously it didn't work out, and we didn't like that one to begin with, but they're thinking, hey, for 2 years, $34 million with Frankie Montas, there's the potential this guy could be a solid four for us and pitch to a four ERA versus Carlos Rodon, who's essentially doing the same thing for $160 million. I'm just pitting the two together
here
for the sake of the conversation.
Yep.
So when you, and now look, you could say the same thing. All right, well, and that's why I think Juan Soto's a smart investment, because the drop off from his replacement is significant.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
But the drop off from, and maybe that's why your argument for not getting Bregman, okay, well, are you going to pay 100 and, you know, 60, whatever it is, $40 million a year for Bregman versus the drop-off. Now, in the Yankees' case, there's a significant drop-off there because it's DJ LeMahieu. They don't have a good third base option. But maybe the next guy could have been a little better for a better value. I don't think the Yankees have a lot of value contracts on their hands. Their value's in Dominguez, Volpe, Wells, Heel, Weaver.
Those are a lot of names you've thrown out there that have pretty prominent roles on the team, though, so that's a good thing.
But they're
they got to deliver.
Well, a lot of them are improving. That's...
Well, true, and that's what... You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day driving. Now, don't get me wrong. Last year at this time, I was so pumped to watch the Soto and Judge show. Of course, every Yankee fan was, right? And not that I loved it back then as well, going into the season with the Birdies and the Tinos and the Jeters and the Moes and the Pettits and the guys that you knew were going to be there. That was tremendous as well. I'm really excited about this Yankee team. Eyes are wide open that there are things that I don't love and things that need to come to fruition for the Yankees to be better than they were a year ago, at least to take another step. And there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. But I'm always intrigued when there's new pieces and there's new parts, provided there's enough of the other stuff that is above average and that there is with the pitching and with Aaron Judge to make it interesting. Sal, I look at it I'm going to simplify it a little bit more. To me, the Yankees, again, not Yankees versus Mets, Yankees and Mets today, I believe the Yankees have more margin for error when they start the season, meaning this. If Volpe scuffles and hits 220, or Wells is hitting 190 through the first 3 weeks, or Dominguez is lost in left field, the Yankees, which I don't anticipate all three, if all three happen, then we got problems. But, I mean, one of them very well might. It's baseball. It's hard. But if that happens, you know you got the bullpen, and you know you have a starting staff that's going to give you a chance to win every day. Whereas with the Mets, you know, if they pitch around Soto and Lindor gets off to a cold start, I don't know if he will, but if he does, if Vientos takes a slight step back, year two, get a book on him around the rest of the league.
It's a lot of ifs, though.
It's also a lot of ifs at the Yankees. I presented there as well. I got you. Then I think when you look at the Mets pitching, I don't believe, that's a little strong, I don't love their ability to keep their team afloat if the offense is stagnant. I love the Yankees' pitching ability to do that.
I would normally agree, but then we saw it last year. And I just think the way the sport has evolved, you can find pitchers who can maybe keep you in the game for 4 or 5 innings. Look, I think it's a fun conversation to have. And by the way, I don't like the Mets rotation because I certainly don't like a 6-man rotation. I'm open to the idea, but they're doing it to placate Kodai Senga, which to me doesn't make any sense. Think about it. The Mets are using 6 starters, and they don't really have the quality of starters.
Yep.
So, like, their strength was depth. They had 8 guys. Okay, well, these guys are professional arms. You're not digging into the minors to have a guy get tattooed when he comes up and take a spot. You got professional arms that can give you a quality start, 4 or 5 innings, you know, keep the
couple
team
runs
in the game.
Yeah, give you punchers chance. Yeah, I got you.
Which I like. Yep. But now when you lose one of those 8, or whatever it is, and one of the ones who you thought was going to be good because they brought him in for a 2-year, $34 million deal in Montas, and you're going with 6 as opposed to 5, all of a sudden that depth is now, it's not depth. Now you're using them on a regular basis. So I think that there are flaws in that as well. I just think it's the better value to the way you're building a team. Meanwhile, the Mets have the highest payroll in the sport.
Yeah, you talk about value, I know.
Because of the contracts that were there before. I mean, I think that that'll be shed a little bit as the years go on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan just conceptually really applying to anything in life. If something is average or you want to look at the back of the Mets rotation, maybe a tick below average going in, why am I going to stretch that even thinner and make that more of a focal point? You think that you would want to work around maybe some deficiencies, but the silver lining is this, and I don't love a 6-man. I know why they're doing it for Senga. You're absolutely right. But if Senga, instead of making 32 starts, makes 24, 25, and he gets the ball in October, and he's in Atlanta or Philly or L.A. or at Citi Field, and that ghost ball is just diving, and he's got 9 whiffs, and he's got 2 hits, and he's got 1 walk, and the Mets are up 5-1, you're going to be okay with that 6-man rotation, which might be average at some point this season.
BT and Sal on the Fan of Friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Greg is in Westchester. What's up, Greg?
Hey, I just wanted to say, a big Met fan here, where Stearns really earned his keep last year was the fact of how many guys were on that opening day roster and how many guys, you know, they cut ties with when they weren't being successful. He had guys come up on that playoff roster. You probably have 10 to 12 guys who weren't even on the opening day roster, and that doesn't even include guys like Deniel Nunez, who wasn't even in Major League camp last year. He started out in minor league. No one knew who he was. He's able to find the right fits for the organization at the right time, and I just think that's the strength of Stearns that I haven't seen Cashman even come close to.
Well, you know what's interesting? It is definitely a strength, certainly working off his first-year model. Thanks for the call, buddy. We appreciate it. You know, you think about some of the things, and I'm just going to do a Cashman-Stearns thing for a moment here, both. So Cashman's greatest strength, his absolute strength, is somehow every year finding an incredibly viable bullpen. Every single year. Now, it helps when you got Moe for a couple of years. It helps when you have Chapman for a couple of years. I got that. But he's always able to uncover some gems, and that's his absolute strength. The very well might be the absolute strength of David Stearns, where he has this ability to look at a starting pitcher and, you know, squeeze some blood out of the rock and get manageable deals and not commit long term and then eventually discard them and kind of keep recycling and repurposing those. But I don't think that he wants to do that forever. I think he's on a treadmill to get some of these Sprouts and some of these other young flamethrowers up to the majors.
And then that's
and then you accent the rotation with those guys.
Correct. And that's the way, though, to build the rotation. The best way, draft, develop
always
the young pitching.
Yep.
That's the way you get. That's what he did in Milwaukee. That's what he's got to do with the Mets eventually, but that takes time. Mets have their pitching lab, all that. This way you're not paying a ridiculous amount of money for a guy who's already given his best years to another organization.
I agree.
You may have to pay eventually to keep that guy here, but maybe you get a good bargain if you lock him up, buy out some of his, you know, arbitration years, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way, and the more that I think about it, the more I love that way of building a team, especially in today's day and age where pitchers just don't go deep anymore and starting pitchers always getting hurt and they cost a ton of money. Eric is in Clifton, New Jersey. What's up, Eric?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, fascinating conversation. I think you take the overall thesis from what you're saying, Sal, the last piece of what you were saying, BT. You know, the Dodgers used 40 starting pitchers last year. The MLB average is 12. You know, 42 is the all-time record set by Seattle in 19. BT, you and I had spoken about this when you were with Teak. I think a lot of these roads lead back to the pitch clock. You're forcing these pitchers to just keep gunning and gunning and gunning.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's why they're burning through them. And you see, like, the older pitchers now, like, to your point, you know, we had to get rid of two older pitchers. Thank God we got something in return. And the second main point I would say is that this game has gravitated way more towards the bats. I mean, dude, Sal, you and I have said, like, we had to go get Soto because if you're going to get past the Dodgers, there are 7, 8, and 9 hitters. They could be 1, 2, 3 hitters on like 80% of the teams in Major League Baseball. Those guys don't swing at bad pitches. I think there was one game in the playoff series against us, Sal. I think they said that they swung like 4 pitches that were out of the strike zone. I'm not sure I've ever heard of something like that. I don't know if Silicon Valley's in planting chips in these guys' eye sockets or what, but they don't have bad at bats.
Here's the thing, and thank you for the call, Eric. Good stuff right there. Just to give you some perspective, BT, on my change in thought process here with the way the sport has evolved. If you asked 10 years ago, and I remember saying this on the air. I wasn't at the Fan at the time. I was in the minor leagues at WOR when they had the Mets. And I remember saying, working my way up.
Is that double or triple? Is that high? Is that high A? Where are we at? Double A? Triple A.
As far as sports talk goes.
Double A. Double A.
Whatever it was. It was good for me working on my game. And here I am. But anyway, I remember saying on the air, I meant this. I would not have traded Matt Harvey for Mike Trout. This is 2015. Because that's how much I value. Now, obviously, I knew what Trout was then. It had nothing to do with the injuries or projecting any of that. It was that I valued that dominant ace more than I valued anything else in the sport. And a part of me still does believe in having, like, once the Yankees get to the postseason, the idea of Cole, Fried, 1-2 punch.
And then heal.
That's very, very appealing to me.
Yep.
But I do think the game has changed to where the ace isn't what we thought it was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. And while that could be a great advantage to the Yanks, to Eric's point, like, look at the Dodgers, great team last year. They didn't beat the Yankees with their starting pitching. I mean, the pitching was fine. They beat them with the bats. That's the way that you do it.
Yeah, but if you have enough of the bats, and I think the Yankees do, then the overabundance of pitching, it puts you over the top.
See, that's where we disagree in that I don't think I think they were a bat short, and that's with counting on Giancarlo Stanton. Now, that could change if Dominguez and Volpe and Wells do what we expect them to do. But going in right now, I do think their lineup looks a little thin.
Well, it.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not going to push back on that. Yeah. It's definitely thin. Every time this comes up, I think if you're a Yankee fan, to not acknowledge it's a little thin, I think is a little foolish or a little naive. Hell, we don't even know who's going to bat first. I mean, so you can't even get to the rest of, you know, we know who we think we should do. Well, you know, it's either Dominguez. Well, we know Dominguez, you know, Boone certainly leaning that way. Yeah. I can make the case for Volpe in year three, but obviously you look at some of the minor league numbers. Dominguez profile's a bit better in terms of an on-base guy. There's a lot of baseball reasons to put Dominguez over, obviously, over Volpe. And plus, if Volpe's batting first and you want him to steal 35 bases, you want him running wild in front of Aaron Judge, there's a thought there as well that it might affect Judge. I get all the baseball stuff, but I still think, Sal, when you've got an all-time, not even just an all-time home run hitter, like an all-time great hitter, anchor in the lineup, and all right, even if you get the B version of Bellinger, now if you get the C version, that changes things, but if you get the B version of Bellinger, I mean, it's not Soto and Judge, that's never going to be the case because Bellinger can't shine Soto's shoes,
right?
But that is pretty formidable. And, you know, and then you mix in Jazz stealing 35, 40 bases, popping 18 to 20, things he's already done. Not things that we're hoping he does and that he overachieves. Like, he's already put that out there. That's the kind of player he is. So I do think that they have enough. So I'm not saying to be the Dodgers offense, but you telling me we're not going to sit there, you know, three out of every five, six games, Yankees don't put up six, seven runs?
Yeah,
I think the Yankees going to crush the ball.
Hard to believe. And plus, they generally do that anyway, especially in that ballpark. I know offense has been an issue for them, you know, a couple seasons in a row. Last year it was.
Certainly when Judge got hurt a couple years ago. That's why they make the playoffs.
I mean, that's the other thing. Stand there. God, if anything ever happens to him, they'd be totally screwed. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. 888-808-1019. I also want to ask you, on that, who is the biggest X factor in that Yankee lineup? We could do the Yankee lineup. We could also do the X factor for the Mets rotation, something like that. But I want to get your thoughts on the biggest X factor with the Yankees lineup. BT and Sal on the Fan. Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan on this Thursday morning. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. We're talking some baseball and just really the philosophy of the way the Mets have built the team versus the way the Yankees have built the team. And you talked about the Yankee lineup, ET. We went over this earlier in the weekend. I think it's a fun exercise just to look at the lineup and go up and down. I don't think that the Yankee, like right now without Stanton and thinking about, oh man, if Dominguez doesn't do what they need him to do, if this guy doesn't do what they need him to do, they can look a little thin. If Bellinger, like you and I are assuming Bellinger's going to have a big year. We're assuming Judge's going to be healthy, have a monster year as always. Assuming Dominguez is going to take a legit step and be an impact player, Volpe, Wells, like there's a lot of assumption in there.
Yeah.
But if not, all of a sudden the lineup, there is a way where you could paint it to look thin. Who do you think is the singular biggest X factor in that Yankee lineup?
Okay, I think it's Dominguez. And let me get you here and why I think that. First of all, part of this is reacting to what I've already seen, and then part of it is obviously projecting, all right, based on what I've seen. So, you know, I think some people might say Volpe, and I understand that. Watching Volpe in the postseason, you know, was on base 40% of the time. Had 50 at-bats, by the way. OPS over 800. He's going to steal, going to catch it. I think Volpe's fine. I don't think he's ever going to be Gunnar, Henderson, or Witt, but he's going to be good. I look at Austin Wells, right? Austin Wells finished with the second-highest OPS as a catcher. And now he really flamed out at the end. I think he was shot. But if you go back to July and August, do you realize that his OPS in July and August was 941 and 936? So, and I've always, you know, I've always, yeah. I believe in Wells more than Volpe. So I do.
Yeah.
I've always been a big Wells believer. So I'm not saying that there's no concerns with them, but I'm going to believe that they're more constants and givens than concerns, okay? Judge is Judge. Jazz is going to have pop. I don't know what his average will be, but Jazz will steal some bases, and Belly's going to hit some bombs, give you a little athleticism in center. So, you know, so Judge, Jazz, and Belly are constants. Volpe and Wells, I believe, will be good and good enough. Goldschmidt's going to be okay. Maybe if he's a little bit better than okay, that's fine. The reason the answer is and their base is going to be a mess until it's not. Dominguez is the answer for me, not only because of the upside, like there, and I don't know if he hits the ceiling. I said to Sal yesterday, hey, I need to know by the All-Star break, who the hell is Jason Dominguez? I'm tired of guessing. We've been reading about him since he's 16. You know, he's never really even had like a monster minor league season. He's been banged up, that he can't catch fly balls. Like, Dominguez needs to answer the questions, and I think he will, but Is he a superstar? I'm definitely not going that far, but he could be. But why he's the answer, Sal, is because if he is a mess, like if he's just not the guy,
they're in trouble.
Now you're tapping into a bench that stinks, and I have no idea who's playing left. And now if you're trotting in, or trotting out, I should say, a substandard left fielder with third base and offensive mess, now you just got that lower third is just not good.
And when I ask this question and we answer it, like obviously if Judge goes down, all bets are off.
Well, that's
in this
a given.
Particular line. Right, so we're not even going to address that. I tend to agree with you that it's Dominguez. I think you could make an argument that it could be Bellinger because we're just assuming Bellinger is going to regain form. He's been inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this ballpark, in this lineup with Judge, I'm fascinated to find out how Boone is going to work it. With Belly, we assume Dominguez maybe going to be leadoff, which would mean probably Judge number two. I still would rather have Bellinger in front of Judge. But if I ask you this way, okay, so we kind of agree. You laid out all the reasons for Dominguez. I'm not going to double down and say the same exact thing you just said. Agreed. His potential could be superstar.
Mm-hmm.
It could be
disaster. It could be the minors.
Exactly. That's where the X factor is. If I ask you, we'll go through them real quick. Question marks.
Go ahead.
Going into with the Yankee lineup going into the year. Like Judge, obviously, not a question mark. There's no doubt
none
that what he's going to do. Even if he's hurt, he's still going to hit 45 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz,
I don't have any questions
me
with
neither.
Jazz. He's going to be a better fielder at second. He's going to steal 35 or 40, hit 20 home runs.
Okay.
Really big fan.
Me neither. Now is where it starts to get
mm-hmm.
interesting. Belly.
See, I'm not expecting him to be a star. I think as a baseline, just kind of as a floor, I think you get, like, minimally here, Sal, 26, minimum.
Right.
26, 27 home runs, 15, 16 steals, 270 average, good two-strike approach. That's, like, almost worst case unless he got hurt. And better center field play than they had a year ago. I'm not worried about Bellinger. I understand there's been big fluctuations.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you. I think it's a fun exercise. That's why I wanted to ask you if he's a question mark or not. To me, it's like a mild question mark. I'm not as concerned about him as I am some of the others that we're going to get to here, but I do still think there's a question mark. He hit 18 homers a year ago. 266, 18. That's not going to fly.
He also missed a month.
Now, 2 years ago, 307, 26. So we're expecting somewhere like that.
Hit 270 with 32, 33 home runs, 90 RBIs,
okay.
Play center field, get some steals.
I still think there's a little question mark, but I'm going to lean toward, I pretty much think you could rely on what you're going to get from Bellinger. Dominguez.
I think that he's going to pop, man.
But he has to be a question mark, though.
He definitely is.
Okay,
he definitely is.
Yes.
But I think you're going to see a nice tantalizing combination of speed and pop. I really do.
Austin Wells. I know you like him.
I love him.
I do too. But
20 home runs. Good approach.
You could say it confidently, but
I can't say, but as a catcher.
Is it fair to say that he's a question mark still?
No, for me, he's not. For you, he might be. For me, he's not. For me, he's been one of the best young catchers in baseball, and I think by the end of the year, he's going to probably assert himself as one of the three or four best overall hitters in baseball,
right,
as a catcher.
But that is your anticipation.
But I'm also lifting on some of the things he did a year ago.
Okay.
And again, I don't want to get too stat heavy, but Sal, last July and August, again, his OPS was 941 and 936.
I get it.
In back-to-back months.
I know overall, though.
He couldn't hit.
He's never.
Love
him. He hasn't had a full year.
I understand.
Okay, so he's less of a question mark in your mind than
Dominguez.
Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough. Volpe.
Again, it depends what the parameters are. I don't think he's ever going to be a superstar, so that's not a question.
Okay.
Is he going to steal 25 bags? Yeah. Is he going to hit 15 to 22 home runs? Yeah. Is he going to catch everything at him? Yes. Is he going to hit, above 260? I don't know. I know he hit 243 a year ago. I do have some questions, but not ones that I don't question if he's going to implode. Like, I know he's going to be a functional major leaguer at minimum.
And the reason why I have questions with him is because I expect more than you do. I'm still holding him to those high standards.
Why, though?
Because
you haven't seen it.
Yeah, but that's what he was supposed to be.
Because he was drafted in the first round?
No, I've seen glimpses of it from him. I haven't seen enough of it. I think he could be a game changer. So I still believe he's got that in there. Is there a question mark? Is he going to hit 250 or 20? No. Like, we know what the floor is with him. But that's, to me, that's not good enough. And then if you combine his floor, if you're just expecting that, with the other question marks, with third base, where that's not even a question mark. Like, right now, it's
a disaster.
Yeah,
we're not even going to go into third base.
DH, disaster. And then the last one will be Goldie.
Yeah, I got to say he's a bit of a question mark.
Me too.
I'd be so, less than honest. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yeah, he looked. He finished well, but he had a rough season.
So that's kind of the point of the exercise where there are. Well, I mean, forget third base and DH, which are known not good. There are some question marks in there. Now, Goldie could be the pro that we're expecting and hoping he could be.
Just be better than Rizzo.
And all is good, right?
Yeah.
But he could fall off the cliff and it could be a disaster the way that Rizzo went. And then what?
That would stun me.
I don't see that coming.
He's gonna post. He plays $150 every year.
He's been going down though, declining.
True, he does like to go oppo. So as a right-handed hitter, you know, using that short porch and obviously gapping it in right center. Again, I'm not saying he's gonna hit 305. I mean, could I see him hitting 270 with, you know, 23, 24? Yeah, I could. Maybe 270 is a bit ambitious, but he's not gonna hit 220 or 230. I don't think. And if he does, that's a problem. And by the way, I know we get back to these calls. Yep. I want you to do the Mets coming up. I want the same question. I've got some questions for you. I want you to answer them. What you view as a question, what you view as a constant going in. But the thing about the Yankees, while there are, I think you have a few more questions with the lineup than I do, if you were to do the rotation, outside of Gerrit Cole's health and the bullpen, I have no questions, which is what evens things out, which is why I'm excited and confident that the Yankees will be very, very good.
Correct. Great point. I figured we just picked the weakest link of each part, which would be the... And I said the same thing with the Mets rotation. That would be the question there. Eric is in Riverville, New Jersey. What's up, Eric?
Hey, buddy.
BT, Sal, what's happening, boys? Yep.
What's cooking, man?
Fantastic conversation. I absolutely love it's a fascinating conversation because both teams are flawed, but for very, very different reasons. And I know you guys are going to touch the Mets pitching because, to me, that's a very big problem for the Mets or a concern, right? And trying to, you know, assume that they're going to do what they did last year, whether that's Peterson or Manaea, and that Senga is going to stay healthy. And then, obviously, that Holmes is going to convert to a starter. It's a big question mark. I mean, I think for all the reasons you said that the Yankees lineup is weak, that's obviously where the concern is on the Mets side. For the Yankees,
I don't know if it's weak. It's a little suspect in a few spots. I don't know if anybody said it's weak. Like the Royals lineup is weak outside of Witt. I mean, let's not go nuts here.
No, I agree with that.
Okay.
I agree with that. I think the challenge really is particularly at third base and DH. I mean, if DJ LeMahieu, like as they're trying to sell us now, is going to be the DH walking in on opening day, Cashman's going to get laughed out of the building. That's not going to happen. So, you know, but to me, like, who is the X factor? I completely agree with you, BT. It is the Martian. Like, is he going to be the Martian, right? Like, that's the question we all have. Like, is he going to turn into that guy? We don't know. But also, Volpe, to me, is like 1B of that conversation. Like, Volpe cannot hit 240 with 60 RBIs. Can't happen.
I agree.
But what are your expectations for him? And thank you for the call, Eric. See, that's the difference. I have higher expectations, BT, for Volpe than you do. So what are you penciling him in as? And by the way, also a factor here is we could say Dominguez is going to be the X factor.
Yeah.
If he doesn't hit leadoff, which we assume he's going to, at least maybe to start, but what if he doesn't? And they make Volpe the leadoff hitter. Like, I think then he could become more of the X factor because you're going to have higher expectations. We don't know how the exact lineup is going to go right now. I do think that there are a lot of question marks, but the two, to me, biggest fluctuations could be Dominguez and Volpe.
Let me ask you this. Let's simplify it this way with Volpe. Fascinating, because he took a big jump. He jumped 40 points in the average, and it's still not impressive, but if there's more in there, then it's going to get into a territory that's pretty good for his power-speed combo. Over-under batting average, Volpe, 255.
I'm going to say...
That would be about a 12-point jump.
I'm going to say under, unfortunately.
Under?
Well,
if you're saying under, how do you believe in him so much more than me?
I do believe in him more, but I still have those expectations. He hasn't done it yet.
Are you not going to hit 255 in year three?
I mean, I hope that he does.
Come on, man. He's got to.
But even if he did that, to me, it would still be this. Like, I want him to be a 300 hitter.
He's never going to be a 300. He's not going to be a 300 hitter. That's not him.
Where's he hitting in the lineup? Is he hitting leadoff?
First or seventh. Over under 20, 22 home runs.
Dude, he had a bad year last year.
Well, but it was a lot better than his first year, which was awful in terms of the average.
I feel like maybe it's just the postseason, or maybe I just accentuate the positives. Volpe's start last year. I was on the air. I said it. He's going to be a superstar. He's on the verge of superstardom.
And I was reluctant. I was like, I love the way he looks, but it's early.
We had Cashman on last summer. I told him to his face. He said the same. I was like, dude, I thought this guy's going to be a star. He said, yeah, us too. They still believe in him. So, maybe I should say over. I don't know what to believe with him, which is why I think he is a major question mark.
The expectations still for me are through the roof for Anthony Volpe, but based on his first two seasons, I think you'd probably sign for 260 and 18 homers, which to me would be disappointing, but it would be his best season yet.
Yeah, now again, if you
accent 25 steals, whatever, too.
No, I know what you mean. I was going to say, if you accent the 260 with 18 home runs and he steals 30 bases and he's, you know, top three gold glove, and he plays every day, and he's an energy guy.
Yeah.
You know, and that now it's a little bit of a different profile, but that's why it's never to disparage Volpe. Nobody's rooting harder for Volpe than me. I love the jersey thing. You don't get into that.
Nah,
I love it.
I don't care about that. I don't care about that.
I know. We're 15 miles from Del Bard. My son plays shortstop. I love this. Right. He loves me. Loves Volpe. I want him to be a superstar. He's not. He's not going to be Witt. He's not going to be Gunner. He's not Lindor. You happy Met fans? I said it. He ain't Lindor.
Cut that up, don't you?
Yeah. Woo. Yeah. You know what I mean? So he's not that player. And I don't think that he's ever going to be. Now, you don't have to be an A-plus player. Can you be a B player? That's the question.
You know, I still think, maybe I answered that too quickly about the 255, although it is hard based on what we've seen. I still think he can be a top player. I really do
like
believe it.
Like Witt and Henderson?
I don't know about that.
Well, that's
far.
A top player.
Oh, okay, maybe top five, top six. Dude, Volpe last year, he was on, I mean, he was looking great for the first month of the season. I don't know what happened. He falls off.
And he looked great in October.
In the postseason.
He had some, he hit almost every, even his outs were on the button.
And I think they're relying on him to do more than 260 and 18. I really do.
And I will, but, you know, first you got to cross the 245 threshold.
I
mean, this is coming from somebody who's very rarely conservative, and I'm telling you, that's you went from 209 to 243. If we could get that 30-something point jump, we're good.
All right,
I don't know if we can.
What do you want to ask me when we come back? The X factor for the Mets rotation?
The X factor for the Mets, you determine where you apply it, and I want to throw a couple of scenarios at you, and I want to get your level of confidence.
All right, and we'll continue with your call as well. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan.
And by the way, game three of the BT and Sal Baseball Card World Series today, tied up at one, and my crib
tied
to the Bronx.
Tied at one, you get to pick the year now. I'm on the road.
I cannot wait for that.
BT and Sal back on the Fan. 888-808-1019. Fun baseball conversation to start the show. I'll have some fun with some other stuff along the way. Game two of the Baseball Card World Series, 1140. Kurt Schilling will join the show at, what did I say, game two? Game three of the Baseball Card World Series at 1140. Kurt Schilling will join the show at 1:20. Before the break, BT, you had teased that you want to ask me about the Mets X factor. The way I would say it, I guess, is the rotation, because we could go over the lineup, and Mendy let it out there yesterday on Mets Hot Stove with Gary Apple, Zeal, and Blevins on SNY about the lineup. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not see this.
It's going to be Soto, number two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. I wouldn't do that, but I'm not surprised.
Lindor, Soto, he didn't write it in stone, but said, all right, we already named Lindor, the first guy. Mm. It seems like it's going to be Soto, number two. Anyway,
did he go beyond that? He didn't go to 3 and 4, right?
He did not go beyond that. But you could do the
Mantos and Pete, I would think.
Yeah, I mean.
I would think, right?
I think what they're going to do, it's not what I would do.
Yeah.
What they're going to do is, this is just a guess, they're going to go Lindor, Soto. That's not a guess. That's what he said. I think they're going to go Pete, three, Nimmo, four, Vientos, five.
Don't love it.
I would go, my lineup I've been giving you all winter here,
yep.
Lindor, Soto, Vientos, Nimmo, Alonso.
Yes, which differs from mine of Lindor and then Vientos, two, followed
Soto,
by Soto, three,
Alonso.
Followed by Pete Alonso, yes. Four, then Nimmo,
so
then maybe Alvarez, whatever. But
we
yeah.
all have three different ones.
And his is the one that counts. He's the manager, so he's not going to listen
all
to
right,
us.
All right, so
X factor for you, Sal.
Now, for the whole...
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Because the perceived weakness of the Mets going in is the staff, much like the perceived weakness of the Yankees is their lineup. So you hit me with the X factor for the lineup. Your X factor for the rotation.
God, I think it's a great question. If we're going off the same premise that we did with the Yankees, right, it's going to be, for me, who's got the highest potential to be a difference maker. Like, I think Peterson is solid. I don't think he's got the potential to be a difference maker. Clay Holmes, I think, will be solid. Could be a disaster. I think he'll be solid. He would maybe be second in this list. I think it's Kodai Senga. I believe Manaea is going to be what he was a year ago. I don't know what Kodai Senga is going to be. And people can say what they want. I know you like him. You're higher on him. He was very good his first year. He was a disaster last year. Did not pitch. And when he did pitch in the postseason, wasn't very good. Is he going to be as good as he was his first year? Is he going to be somewhere in between? The expectations for Senga, let's not forget, and it does mean something. The expectations for Kodai Senga when the Mets signed him were never to be an ace. He's not Yamamoto. He wasn't supposed to be an ace coming over from Japan. He was supposed to be, and matter of fact, the Mets at the time thought he might be better out of the bullpen. So,
is that true?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about when they signed him? Because they gave him 5 years, 75, not to go out of the bullpen.
He didn't get a lot. They thought he, or maybe, I don't know if it was the Mets. I think there were people in the organization and people outside of the organization that viewed him better off as a reliever.
Okay.
So I think Senga, like, is it safe to say, in your opinion, that Manaea is pretty solid as a one or two?
Yeah, I think, you know, on a loaded team, he's not your ace.
Right.
But, you know, I'm a Manaea fan. Okay. I think he's going to be good.
Or maybe
the
better way to phrase it is it safe to say you know what you expect to get from Sean
Manaea? I think he's going to be effective. He's going to have a good year.
Me too, right? I kind of can figure out what he's going to be. I think Senga could pitch like a number one or could pitch like a three or four. And if he pitches, like if Manaea does what he did at the end of last year and we expect him to continue doing, and Senga pitches like he did in 2023 and is a top of the rotation guy, don't you think that changes things with Senga and Manaea then?
Yes.
As a 1-2 punch?
100%. So I like Senga.
That's why I know you believe in him more than I do.
I do.
I mean, that's why I have him as my X factor. I think he could be a difference maker in the rotation. Who else is it? I mean, maybe Montas would have been the answer to this question if you asked me, you know, a week ago.
Uh-huh.
I got it here, BT. Manaea, Senga, Peterson, Holmes, Blackburn, Canning, McGill, Frankie Montas. Like
Holmes,
that,
yeah. Who's four again?
I had Holmes, Blackburn, five.
Yep, and who's six now?
Canning.
That, okay, so
Tyler McGill.
Yep, I got you. All right, so let's do this. So it's not conventional, but it's a six-man rotation. Obviously, if you got five, it's easier on the math. Because give me the percentage. So, okay, Manaea, we're going to give him a check. Senga, you're worried about, so we're going to give not an X, but a question.
Yeah.
Right?
Actually, I just changed my answer. I totally forgot something.
What? Okay, who is it?
Brandon Sproat.
He
could be the X factor because you saw it last year. Christian Scott came up and showed good potential.
I think Scott looked great.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. But again, he got hurt.
I think Sproat's
now
pretty filthy.
Now, again, who the hell knows? I'd be lying to you if I said I know anything about Brandon Sproat. Like, I haven't watched him pitch. I've seen the highlights and know enough about him to know that. He's a guy that I regretted to mention last week when we were doing this exercise, or earlier in the week about Montas.
Okay.
He's just getting overlooked right now. Of all these names, outside of Senga and Manaea, Sproat's got the highest potential. Like, it's not even debatable.
It definitely seems that way. Yeah, I've seen some clips on
the highest ceiling. He's supposed to be...
I know.
Now, I mean, years ago, it was supposed to be Mike Vassell coming up. You know how I am about prospects.
Mm.
But for the X Factor conversation... If I'm factoring in Sproat, who right now is not in the picture, I think he could be a difference maker in this rotation.
Interesting. All right, so I just wrote his name. I push him to the side. So we're going to put a check next to Manaea. We're not worried about him. You are, and again, there's varying degrees of concern or questions, but it's not unfair for you to put a question mark next to Senga, correct?
I would have a little bit of a question.
Yeah, that's why I say there's different degrees. Yeah. Peterson, slight question?
I think less of a question than Senga because I think the volatility of what I think he's just going to sit nice as a three or four.
Holmes, question or no?
I think you have to
based on the transition.
You have to. Now, for me, I do trust that it's going to work out, but come on.
When you guys signed him, I liked it.
Absolutely.
I liked it more than most. But I'm like, okay, it's smart.
Absolutely a question.
Blackburn, question.
Yeah,
he's not good, but if he's going to be a starter, that's...
Yeah.
So we're going to put a little question, right?
I think he's okay as a five or a six. I mean...
What about Canning?
I know. I mean,
who the hell knows? Yeah. So question, because we don't really know a ton about him.
Question.
So I think any way you look at it, Sal...
Montas, obviously.
Massive question. Yeah. I think it's anything less than saying that, at least now on paper, and I wrote it down, so I'm literally holding paper, that 50% of the projected Mets rotation, not including Sproat, is a question. Fair?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. How many position players are questions?
I would say...
This is where it gets more favorable for you, but there's got to be a few.
I would say...
Second base?
But even that, like, I think I think the questions, like, they're not going to be loaded at every position, so I kind of know what I'm getting from Siri. You may not like it, but I like it. Like, I like the defense and the potential pop there.
Okay.
So I'm okay with that. That's not a question. Soto, obviously not a question. I think Alonso, less of, like, you should know what you're
getting. He's going to hit home
runs. Again, to me, I don't think he's going to have a huge year, but I hope that he does.
Mm-hmm.
Second base is kind of insignificant. It's McNeil, Acuna. Like, I'm not expecting much there. I would say question, but mild, like, or an insignificant question. Lindor, no question. Vientos, I don't have a question. I think the two biggest questions are Alvarez and Nimmo. So if you were to ask me the biggest X factor for the Mets lineup, it would be one of those two. Maybe even more so Alvarez, because at least Nimmo, the floor is still...
He's going to hit some home runs. He's not going to hit 220. Right, I know what you mean.
But I still think he could be. He has all-star potential. I'm counting on Nimmo being an all-star this year. If he's not, it'd be a disappointment. I told him that to his face. So, I mean, he's expecting that too. We'll see what happens. But yes, I would say the bigger X factor or question is Alvarez, where he could be a star or he could be a bust.
So think about what we just did here. We did the Yankees. We did the Mets. Yankees have a couple of questions around the batting order, positions, fewer questions on the staff. Mets probably have fewer questions with the lineup, but more questions with the rotation, which is exactly why I said I like both teams coming in. I think both teams are good, but
there's things,
both teams didn't go all in. That's exactly what I said an hour ago.
Yeah, and it's just a difference of how you would prefer your team being built, heavy in the rotation or heavy in the lineup. I would go the lineup myself. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan Warrior calls when we come back.